Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to Patriot Nation Radio Live, 347-637-3942.
Here with Conservative Perspective on the Mojo 5-0 Radio Network, Mojo50.com. If you aren't listening, you should be, because it is the very best in libertarian and conservative talk radio. We also have a live version of the program that comes on Tuesdays and Thursdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time at Blog Talk Radio on Patriot Nation Radio. You can find us there as well. Tonight, as I've said many times, and I do this every time I bring out a guest, and the reason for it is very simply to demonstrate my commitment to you, the audience, of bringing in people who I know without a fact, without a doubt, rather, whom I know without a doubt are worthy of listening to, and tonight is no exception. You know, we've had some pretty awesome guests on the program. We've had Dr. Sebastian Gorka. We've had our friend Michael Cutler. We've had Claire Lopez and Trevor Loudon. And tonight we have with us the editor of frontpagemag.com, Mr. Jamie Glazov, Dr. Jamie Glazov. Jamie has a PhD in history. His specialty is within Russian, United States, and Canadian foreign policy. As I said, the editor of frontpagemag.com, and also the author of United in Hate, The Left's Romance with Tyranny and Terror. He's the host of the web TV show, The Glazov Gang. His new book, Jihadist Psychopath, How He is Charming, Seducing, and Devouring Us. Ladies and gentlemen, our guest this evening, and I am very proud to have him here with us, Jamie Glazov. Jamie, welcome to A Conservative's Perspective. You do us great honor.
It's a privilege to be here. Thank you so much, James.
As I was going over some of the things about you as an individual that I wanted to talk about with you this evening, as I mentioned earlier, one of the things that I would like for you to talk about, if you would, was your dad, Yuri Glazov, who was an intellectual, an academic elite in the Soviet Union. And at some point, he had a road to Damascus moment and began to speak out against communist oppression. And before we get into that, and that's where I want to lead up to, what I would like to ask, because you and I are close to the same age, what was it like as a young, preteen boy living in Soviet Russia?
Well, I was preteen, but I was under five.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So
your memories are somewhat limited then.
They are limited, but of course they still affect you, just like we are affected even in our mom's womb and everything that's happening even during that time. So definitely this is, the foundation to my life, and I was in, circumstances in our family during those very young years of persecution. There was, we lived in an atmosphere where there could be a knock at the door at any time in a totalitarian regime. And, of course, that stays with you and on many levels. And I remember just as a young kid, the day at the airport when we were leaving and saying goodbye to our family and the people who were crying and my dad giving the peace sign, the victory. Well, it's the peace sign, but it's also the victory sign.
Yes.
Through a certain window when we were leaving the airport, and all that, left a huge impression on me. And we come from a totalitarian monstrosity, and it's a very long story. Depends what parts of it I'll get into here, and we'll get into. But I am the child of two very brave, great people who took a stand against an evil regime. And we were very lucky to get out of there. And that's another long story. But we got out, and we came to the West, and it was always on my mind, of course, why? What happened back there? What is this place that killed millions of my people that my parents stood up against? And why did my parents almost end up in the gulag? And then as I'm growing older, there's all these people around me, and they're telling me that the place we come from is great and that the place that we're in, United States, is evil. And I was wondering, who are these people? And there's a lot of them. And they turn out to be leftists. And I remember at the age of 11, 12, 13, I became more and more preoccupied with it. And my dad left a book by Paul Hollander it's called Political Pilgrims by Paul Hollander, on the dining room table, and I began to read it because I was always asking him, why are these professors in the university, why do they love Castro so much? And so I dedicated my life to fighting the monstrosity that we come from, protecting the victims of that monstrosity, but also fighting the idea that spawned and engendered that monstrosity and continues to engender those monstrosities. And I want to expose the people amongst us who are aiding and abetting that system to be here. And what's tragic and frightening is before it was just some professor somewhere. Now they're in power in the United States. These people are in power on every level. And they're succeeding in what they want to do. They're succeeding very well.
And this is something that Trevor Loudon speaks about as well, is the, and people, they poo-poo the idea, they shrug their shoulders, they speak disparagingly of McCarthyism, which it turns out he was right, but it's an infestation in the halls of power in the United States that it's been going on since the 1930s. To varying degrees, right. And people at certain levels are just in a constant state of denial because the Soviet Union, fragmented and disintegrated. Therefore, communism no longer exists and is no longer the existential threat that we saw it to be during the Cold War, but that's not true at all.
It's not true at all. So hard, James, sometimes when we have limited time to know which direction to go to. But I just want to say quickly about McCarthy, because it's important to say. What you said is completely right. Even with the revelations that came out of the Soviet Union afterwards, with the declassified documents, with the Venona transcripts, everything that we found out about communist infiltration in the United States, Joseph McCarthy had actually underestimated the infiltration of communist spies. So, yes, absolutely. History vindicated him in terms of his cause. But it's very important to, in my view, not to – we need to say that he – that history legitimized him, but his tactics were awful. And we don't want to get – we don't want to support some of the ways that he had behaved, because there's a better and more graceful and more credible way to behave. And he did a tremendous disservice, and he really discredited – he aided and abetted the discrediting of anti-communism, and that's very unfortunate. However, so I never want to be in this thing where I'm pro-McCarthy because
right.
His behavior was bad. At the same time, absolutely, history vindicated his cause. And we don't need to get into that so much, James, but in general, where you and I and people amongst us, why we need to be so careful going forward is not only our cause is important, but how we handle ourselves.
And that is something, you know, and what you speak to there, I understand completely as the deterioration, the continuing deterioration of civility in in the social arena, whether it's on digital media or in the print or face-to-face. And these things, this is something that Mike Cutler talks about. It's difficult to have that debate.
We have to be careful. Not just civility, yes, it's civility, absolutely. But also we have to be careful what claims we make, who we accuse and how. That's all. Just got to be a little bit careful who we're accusing of what and how, and just be a little bit more wise in that way. But go ahead.
Well, one of the things, and I was reading earlier today, it was a review of your father's book, The Russian Mind Since Stalin's Death, and it was by Vladimir, I hope I get this right, Tismianu. And he mentioned something about, and I'm looking for the term now. Okay, the new man. He said that, you know, he was talking about the universal sentiment of fear that was pervasive throughout the Soviet Union. But then he goes on and he talks about what your father called this combination of fear, this universal fear, and mendacity were intertwined in the genesis of the new man, the Homo Sovieticus. And when I read that, then I understood fully the definition of totalitarianism. And because that it is taking over all of it, all encompassing every facet of the man, inside and out.
Absolutely. On that one, I would say, James, you know, whenever we talk about my dad and my dad's work, I always want to move forward with a little bit of caution, because I can never live up to my dad in the sense of the great scholar and thinker that he was. And I'm humble. And also how courageous he was, you know, something else that we could discuss, because all the time I'm thinking about him. Yes. And, you know, because some people say I'm brave. Maybe I'm brave. Because I'll say stuff that maybe, you know, there's a lot of people cowering in their corners right now. And, okay, I'll get kicked off Facebook. I'll get kicked off Twitter. And I'll be, you know what they're doing to us, right? But imagine living in a Nazi fascist regime, and you know that if you sign a letter, they're going to put you in a concentration camp, and you do it anyway. And, I mean, that's just – I just want to start with that – I just, my dad is just a very, very special person, and I don't know if I could ever compare to that kind of courage, and definitely a great scholar. And all I can say humbly in connection to what you just said, because he was a very deep thinker and had thought all this through and outlined it and deconstructed it. But absolutely, just in general, the left, these socialists, these revolutionaries, these communists, this Marxist idea, it's a rejection of God's creation, of God, how God made us. And it's intertwined even what's happening right now with what DeSantis is trying to do and why the left is so
right.
furious. Because leave little boys and girls alone, because guess what? They're boys and girls and humans are humans. But what the left is always trying to do is create the new man, you see? Because
yes.
in Marxism,
yes.
the belief is that humans are clay. You can just remold and reshape them, you see? Just remold and reshape them. So, and it always mutates how they go about this. In the Soviet Union, it wasn't so much about coming up to a little boy and saying, do you want to be a girl? Guess what? You probably are. Because that's that other demonic dimension of what they're doing today in the West especially. But, you know, in Castro's Cuba and North Korea and all that, they're reshaping man in their own way. They're creating the new Soviet man. And now in order to achieve that, in order to do that, you got to have people scared. So whether it's to put a serum into them today and nobody knows what's even in it, but you got to scare them to death and get them to line up and start taking all these injections. Or you got to get them to believe that, you know, building the new Soviet paradise is the right thing to do. Fear is very important. It's very important to get people scared. So absolutely, my dad was touching on the most important themes in his scholarship. And in general, absolutely there. It's a war against God. It's against a war against
yes.
God's creation. It's against the human being and who and what he is. And because when you hate man for who and what he is, guess who you hate when you look in the mirror? And so that's why there's also a suicidal death wish in the left. And that's always been my interest, because my main interest was the political pilgrims that I mentioned earlier that Paul Hollander talked about and that I wrote about in United and Hate. They're traveling to the Soviet Union to build communism, and then they all get killed over there. They're traveling over here. They're traveling over there. These fellow travelers, they're always traveling somewhere to build communism, and then they're devoured at the altar at which they worship. Is it really any different than wearing a face diaper, suffocating today, and going and getting injected with all these strange potions? There's always a death wish in wanting to remake the earth, because when it gets down to it, only God is perfect, and redemption comes through God in Jesus Christ. But they're making themselves gods, and by making yourself a god, as we know, the utopian enterprise always creates hell on earth, and you kill others, and then ultimately you're devoured by the machine that you created.
How close, in your estimation, based on your studies and your experience, how close are we here in the United States to the level of Soviet-style authoritarianism?
Well, that's a great question, James. It's interesting how totalitarianism works. It can work with a gun to your head, and you
yes.
can be in a prison, or some, you know, some call it soft totalitarianism. There's, you know, there's other descriptions of it. So how does totalitarianism work, and how do they achieve it? And so the Khmer Rouge went about it in one way. Anybody with glasses, just shoot them, because we're building a new world. And so anybody that doesn't look right, anybody that doesn't dress this way, anybody, you know, so we've got that whole Maoist cultural revolution, Khmer Rouge kind of thing. And then you've got the kind of thing where, oh, you're not vaccinated, you're not welcome at our dinner table. Oh, you're not vaccinated, you can't come to university. Oh, you're not vaccinated, oh, you're not even a human being. And there's a way that you can get people into line, you see? There's different ways of getting people into line. You want to be part of the community. You want to be a good person, or do you want to be a bad person that likes Donald Trump and doesn't wear a mask? And I would say a very, very large number of people, very large percentage. I mean, I'm in L.A., and I don't know. It's pretty scary, man. Like,
I'm so sorry.
You see men in their cars, wearing masks by themselves. You see people walking down the street. Oh, okay, yeah, they're both in masks. But lately, there's this new thing. The woman's not got a mask on, but the guy's got a mask on, and they're walking together, and there's nobody around. I mean, and then people are, you know, bragging about these booster shots, and you ask them what's in it. They have no idea. But Fauci said it's good. You know, like, what happens when there's no Jesus Christ in your life or there's no God in your life? All of a sudden, Fauci said something, and it's just the time to roll up the sleeve and get that shot. And so even though it seems like I might be wandering away from your question, it's all directly interconnected. How does totalitarianism work? How does the one-party line work? So it's looking very bad. It's been happening for a long time, James.
Yes.
See, the left has been at war for a long time. That's where David Horowitz is great and such an important figure, because he was showing what they're doing. They are at war 24/7. Meanwhile, conservatives were having barbecues and keeping their trim lawns, and they just wanted to be nice, like, you know, like Romney. And they took over Hollywood. They took over academia. They took over the media. They took over culture. They took over everything. Then they took over the White House. And they're succeeding in installing their one-party line. And so to answer your question, you know, how is it different? Like, when we think that we're free, we think that we're free, but are we free? You know, it's very interesting, even with this whole Russia-Ukraine thing. It's very complicated. I'm the last person as a dissident of the Soviet Union to try to defend Putin. This is a monster. The KGB is an evil entity. He is an evil man on many levels.
Yes.
What he's doing is evil. Our heart goes out to the Ukrainian people. Our heart goes out to the Russian boys that were sent there. Having said that, it doesn't mean that there's not evil forces in the background that are controlling everything as puppeteers. And when you have Klaus Schwab and the George Soros and the Hillary Clinton cabal, and all of a sudden, you know, this is what I really despise. I know so many people that have been cowering for 10 years, just biting their nails in terror, hiding behind a couch. And they can't say anything about Donald Trump. Be quiet. Be quiet. Don't say if you like Donald Trump. Oh, don't say anything against the vaccine. Don't say anything. Don't say anything. But guess what? Now the globalists come with the Ukrainian flag and say, you can be a political activist now. You can be pro-Ukraine. Go ahead. You're so brave. And I know so many of these wretched people on Facebook now. They haven't said a word in a decade. And now they're pro-Ukraine and they're political activists. And guess what? The moment that it comes when their masters will say, you can't be pro-Ukraine anymore, shut your mouth, they'll go back and cowering behind their couch again. And my answer is that not a Soviet dictatorship already in our country where people get in trouble, you know, whether it's on, and it's not just on social media anymore. Okay, I've been kicked off Twitter and I'm not, my Facebook is restricted. I'm shadow banned everywhere. Okay, that's the life of a dissident. But even the fact that I'm saying that, dissident in the United States of America, but it's not just social media anymore, as we know. How about those people sitting in jail right now over January 6th? Yes, that was illegal, what, you know, perhaps it happened there, and that was bad, what some people did. We got all that. But are we sure about what exactly happened there? And are we sure that some of the people languishing in prison over that for such a long period of time, that that's all really justified in terms of everything that happened? I'm just asking a question. You know, so when we're looking around at even some of the strange things that happened in the election of 2020 and how some questions might have not been asked or some investigations might not have gone further or how a president's son and his laptop, was Trump's son and he had left a laptop with some strange things on it and some illegal, quote-unquote, things on it, hypothetically, let's just say, because, first of all, that would just never happen because he's a great guy, Don, let's say Don Jr., this is a man of integrity, saying hypothetically, he would be arrested by the FBI within 24 hours in a pre-dawn raid with SWAT climbing through the windows and helicopters
and
all on top of the house. Yeah, and so maybe it was too long how I answered this, but tyranny is here, and my family escaped from the Soviet Union, and the Soviet Union is now here, and it's I guess I could use the word sobering as one way to describe it.
Was there, beyond the inspiration of your father, and you know, you mentioned Hunter Biden's laptop, and we can also add in Fast and Furious, if we want to go back that far in time. We can also add in the accusations of Russian collusion. We can also add in the denial of the intelligence community spying on the Trump campaign. All of these things, at the time that they happened, we were either told they were untrue, as in Hunter's laptop, as in the pay-for-play schemes with Hillary Clinton, as in so many of those other things, or we were told that it was true and it was not, like the collusion scandal. Mm. And all these things have happened, and everyone, all these smart people, yourself, and all the great contributors at Front Page Mag and various aggregate sites all over the internet, based on your experiences, you are able to infer and map these things out, and what we knew or suspected heavily to be true at that time when it happened within that vacuum turns out to be absolutely correct within 2 or 3 years. Mm-hmm. Everything that's happened has either been proved or disproved to the detriment of the left every single time. Mm-hmm.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And we live in, and that's how totalitarian regimes train you. You know, you're always in a kind of unreality, and they're actually not just getting away with stuff, but they're mocking us. And so that's how things work today. You know, so we're at a stage now where a Supreme Court nominee cannot answer what a woman is, and I can't help wondering if she was sitting at the Oscars the other night. And if it wasn't Will Smith that slapped Chris Rock, but Al Pacino got on stage and slapped Whoopi Goldberg, I wonder if Judge Jackson's reaction would have been different. And the question would be, have to ask why. Now, I know I'm going in another direction here for a minute, but what I'm saying is that what you're saying, like, we're at a point now where you show a man and you tell people that's a woman. They're not allowed to say that it's a man. And then you've got Hunter Biden's laptop. And if you say anything, then you're a conspiracy theorist. If the shots that they're giving people are somehow detrimental, if that's one word to use, and transhumanist and some other things, you're crazy. But then all of a sudden the Pfizer documents come out and legitimize everything that Dr. Zelenko and Dr. McCullough and Dr. Naomi Wolf and so many others are saying, but you're not allowed to say anything. And it's a kind of unreality, but they're mocking us. You see, they're also in a state of mocking us, and you can, a lot of people can go insane, but they definitely, in all of this disorder and in all of this chaos, it's easier just to put the mask on and get in line, you know, and that's how they operate. That's how they train people.
Another form of burqa.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
Another form of burqa. And it's just another example of the incremental subjugation or submission that they expect, that they demand.
Absolutely, James. And James, you just hit on the epicenter of my thinking and on everything so much of what I've dedicated to trying to understand the socialist impulse and how it leads to these demonic earthly incarnations, because the very idea is demonic. But when you just said that, and that's what I really tried to show in United in Hate, and when I get the energy and the time, I want to expand it and update United in Hate to the mask, because there's a hatred of the human being, and there's a hatred of the individual.
Precisely.
There's a hatred, yes, of the individual. So they're going to get rid of cash soon. They're going to get rid of the car, because those two are just, there's too much individualism connected to that stuff. There's too much privacy connected to that stuff. It's all about the digital dollar that's coming and this Chinese, the world global Chinese surveillance system that's coming. I have to be careful here, because whenever I try to make a point, I start talking about 40 other things. So just right now, what you just said, you see, they hate the individual so much that's why the fellow travelers that traveled to China were so fascinated with Maoist unisex clothing. Oh, they were just in ecstasy seeing the Maoist unisex clothing, because, you see, it erases the individual characteristics of each individual, you see? So when you have everybody in Maoist unisex clothing, everybody is the same. You're erasing the God-given differences and talents and characteristics of every single individual, because Jesus Christ died for every single person, and they want to erase that. People aren't important. Individuals aren't sacred. The individuals serve the state, and you're just all the same. But guess what? The fellow travelers were in ecstasy over the Maoist unisex clothing. And, oh, wow, it's very interesting how the radical leftist feminists were also just in ecstasy over the burqa, in ecstasy over the hijab. They also have a romance with that as well, because the Islamist clothing also, even for men, those robes and the enforced hijab, it's just another realm of the Maoist unisex clothing. You see, it's also a totalitarian entity there. They're erasing individual differences. Guess what the mask does? Guess why the left loves the... Okay, the left love Maoist unisex clothing. The left love the burqa. And now there's the mask. Everybody's in the mask. And guess what the mask does? So this is all very much intertwined. It's an attack on the sacredness of every single human being and seeing God's image in one another. Let us make man in our own image in Genesis, because we're made in the image of our Creator. And when you and I will see each other one day, James, not on the phone but in person or on Zoom, we can see each other's faces. We see the creation of God in each other. We see God's image, because we're made in the image of God. Guess in whose interest it is to camouflage and to hide the image of God in each other. So it's all interconnected.
But as you pointed out earlier, they've been at this since the mid-1960s and maybe a little bit before that. And I'm talking about the progressive Marxist left. And It was the Gramscian theory of communism, I think, that was the most effective in getting this job done, because it was all-encompassing in how it moved through and motion pictures and social media and the news and, of course, the levels of power in Washington, D.C., where communists, whether it's Russian or China, doesn't matter, that it's just been so invasive over this time that it's I wonder if it can ever completely be eradicated.
Well, it's never, okay. So first of all, it's never going to be eradicated, because the spiritual battle will always be until Jesus returns and God fixes, quote unquote, or does things the way he wants to, let his will be done. But until, and I'm not in that, you know, obviously only God knows, but until that happens, there will always be a spiritual war, and therefore there will always be a culture war. As long as there, you know, Martin Malia, the scholar, he wrote a lot on the lessons of the failed Soviet experiment, but I'm not so sure it's a failure. Let's just say it's the Soviet experiment. But let's just say the failure in the sense of what a disaster communism is and how it, quote-unquote, collapsed in the Soviet Union, quote-unquote, because there's another thing to discuss there. But he wrote, as long as there is inequality, there will always be socialism. Okay? So as
right.
long as there will be a poor person and there will be a wealthy person, you will always have those who will point at the poor person and say, this is unfair. We need to take from him. And by the way, it doesn't mean that we don't have compassion, that we don't have generosity, that we try to help people. We have to be very careful in believing that we can erase inequality and also be very careful in how we want to bring it about. That's a whole other matter. So, but what was I was going to say is that I was straying there for a minute, that that when you were, yeah, that the key is that culture war will always be there. The frightening thing is how they are winning and have won. And this gets to another thing where a lot of people, there's a lot of conservatives and people in general that don't like how I talk, because a lot of people have an emotional, when you ask, is it too late? Love, you know, is it, can we do? So there's a lot of people, James, who have an emotional incapacity to accept reality, and they can only survive emotionally day by day if they believe something. So people like me that, let's just say, would say that on some levels it's done. People will say to me, oh, you smarten up, Jamie. You need to have faith. You need to have faith. There's always, whenever I'm very realistically saying that we're at the point of no return in terms of certain things, in terms of what the left has done to the United States, and I start realistically just saying the damage that has been done is irreversible, there are certain quote-unquote conservatives that'll reprimand me and say, you need to have faith. They really get on my nerves, James. This is very, very important to discuss here. I really don't like those people for a few reasons. One is, don't tell me to have faith. You need to have faith. Because if, first of all, if we believe in the Bible and we believe in what Jesus said and we believe in what Revelation says, we know that there will come a time, a certain time period, where the Antichrist will globally, to one extent or another, take over. There will be times of these things. There will be a time, and there's also different times, where evil prevails, because on some levels this is his place for a certain time being. And if we are real Christians, we know that we are going to suffer here, and that this is the realm Satan owns on certain levels for a certain time period. So when there was the temptation in the desert of Christ, and Satan says to him, I will give you all of these kingdoms. Jesus didn't contest the claim. If you said, oh, I own the Brooklyn Bridge, somebody will say, nah, you don't own that. But in that case, he didn't contest the claim, because the claim was true in the sense that this is his place for a certain time period. And there, Stalin did do a lot of damage. Mao did do a lot of damage. Khmer Rouge did do a lot of damage. There's a lot of suffering on this planet, and we know that for a certain period, and it might not be tomorrow, like, so I'm at the same time, I'm not trying to come off like I know and I'm some kind of preacher or I know something's going to happen tomorrow. I don't know, but I do know what the Bible says, that there will be a very difficult time where nobody, for instance, will be to be able to buy or sell without the mark of the beast. And by the way, something seems to be happening on that level there. We can discuss
yes.
that in terms of everything going down. My point is that for us believers, and by the way, I don't mean to also exclude other faiths, because our Jewish brothers and sisters may not believe in Jesus, but there's a lot of prophecies in the Old Testament and also a lot of their beliefs. We overlap on a lot of things here. We know that there will be difficult times where very bad people will rule. And so,
yes.
But please forgive me for how I seem to stray, but as you can see, these pieces of the puzzle all kind of fall together, because what I really, when people say, don't talk like that, like I remember I was saying Obama was going to win, and I was being yelled at. Don't say that. You need to have faith. No. I actually just know what's going on, and
right.
I'm actually preparing. I'm preparing. So those people that say, you shouldn't say that, you need to have faith. No, actually, you need to know what's going on in terms of what Biden has done with the debt take a look at the number. Take a look at what's happening at our border. Take a look at what he just did in Afghanistan and tens of thousands of unvetted people coming from a jihadist environment coming into the country. Start adding it all up. If you don't see what's coming down the line, you are a destructive person, because those people who realistically look at the situation, at least we can prepare ourselves to take on what's coming rather than sitting around thinking, oh, everything's going to be okay. And so with the Jewish people in the mid-30s that were saying, hey, these people are going to put us in camps and perpetrate genocide against us, there were also members of the Jewish community at that time that were very condescending to the Jewish people who were making those warnings. And they were saying, oh, you need to be more optimistic. We're entering the 20th century of civility and progress. And they were giving very moralistic, condescending lectures to those brave members of the Jewish community that were making those warnings. And that was very harmful, what those people who prided themselves on optimism did, because it disarmed the people who were saying we need to, you know, get together and start protecting ourselves. You see?
Yes. Yes, I do. And it is, and you're absolutely right. There's where I come from, the part of the country that I come from, basically the philosophy is amongst Christians, and is no matter what happens, God is still God, and he will oversee at the appointed time. And there's a certain level of comfort that as believers I know we can take from that. And it's negotiating that time frame of now until that happens that's got me kind of nervous, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. So look, I think where I'm getting at here is, in terms of our discussing stuff, so I'm just going to be honest. Do I get afraid, and do I not want the comfortable bed that I have and to have my comfortable meals and to have my freedom and to be able to go to the gym and live my life? Of course I'd like to. What, you think I want to live in jail or go and, you know, what, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? I have to live in the forest soon. But I'm very, very, very well prepared for that, though. And I know that it's coming very soon, because James, I'm not taking anything under my skin the way that Klaus Schwab and Harari or all them are very blatantly telling people that that's happening. It's not a conspiracy theory. They're announcing it. Klaus Schwab was saying by 2026, everybody's going to be digitized. Harari's already talking about free will is over. And so we see what's coming. All of this, that, you know, right now they just – this whole phase that just happened, there's a little bit of calm right now, quote-unquote calm, and I don't mean with the awful Ukraine-Russia thing happening. I just mean a little bit in the West right now. They seem to have eased up on the lockdown. They've got the whole plan in gear here. The digital dollar's coming in, the digital global currency system's coming in. Then there'll be the Chinese mass surveillance system that'll come in after that. They've got all planned. My point is I'm not going down with that. So I know that I'm going to suffer, and there's a lot of people like me, and I'm like a lot of people. We know that we're not going to be able to buy or sell without a certain mark. My point is that I've prepared for this my whole life. So there's people that are maybe panicking and, oh, my God, what's going on? And, oh, Jamie, you need to be more optimistic. But those are the people that are in constant incredulous disorientation and fear. It's better to accept reality, to know when Jesus said, do not be troubled by these things, for these things must come to pass, to know that many of us are going to be persecuted and have to suffer. And while our heart bleeds for people suffering, we need to have compassion. We should never be callous. We always cry when there's injustice. And also, we're going to be afraid, and we're going to suffer too. But James, we need to be also dancing in the streets, because we know that Jesus is real, and we know that his redemption and his salvation is real. And again, I'm not excluding other faiths. And again, I'm saying, as our Jewish brothers and sisters, we're all on the same level here, because they're also waiting for their own Messiah, and they know that there's going to be a certain period of suffering, but then they know that the redemption happens. So I'm just saying, those of us that understand some things, we don't get depressed, you see?
Right.
We don't get depressed. We don't get depressed because we already know that this is going to happen. And it just gets on my nerves because there's a lot of conservatives that are like, oh, you're a defeatist. You need to think positively. And these are just lost. They're just lost. And because it does, because in my view, those of us who see the situation for what it is and are preparing for it in a very calm and intelligent way, we actually do better in defending freedom and democracy than they do.
When it comes to the actions and the things that are taking place in Ukraine, I hear a lot of folks say that it is that this, what's going on in Ukraine is somehow the epicenter of all these globalist maneuvers. And I'm not exactly sure as to whether that's true or not. I know that there's a lot of corruption that went on in Ukraine at the time of Petroshenko, before Zelensky. And it seems to me that right now, in terms of what's going on, that Putin has vastly, number one, overestimated the resiliency of the Ukrainian people, or vastly underestimated that resiliency, and overestimated his country's military capabilities. And conventionally, I think he's found himself trapped. I'm reluctant to use the word quagmire, but if you look at it, the last time Russian troops had any combat experience was close to 40 years ago in Afghanistan. And these guys that he's got, I'm sure they're trained fairly well, but they've run into to conventionally, you know, like I said, unless, again, from a conventional standpoint, he's run into a brick wall, and I don't know that he can go any further, and I'm not exactly sure how successful he'll be in coming back.
Well, James, you're a very wise person, and you're hitting on all the key problems, and I never want to put myself in the position where I pretend that I know or understand everything going on. And I'm with you on that. There's something very, number one, tragic going on. I'm here, you know, you got to understand, you know, just in general, just, I mean, there's so much pain in my family. I mean, we're from there. We have so many friends, relatives, suffering so much on all sides. These are brothers and sisters, Ukrainians, Russians. These are brothers and sisters killing each other. And by the way, I'm not trying to say these are two bullies on the block. Of course, Putin's the aggressor. Absolutely. It's just very tragic. I don't know. You're right. I think that Putin perhaps underestimated some things. Everything that you're saying is true. The questions you're posing, I'm always a bit hesitant and don't know, because who knows what the actual tactics are. Like, I'll just give an example. Like, there's so much naivete. Like, just even on Fox News, there's some people that are like, oh, Putin's really stupid. He's really going to lose a lot of support from the Russian people. Like, what are these people talking about? He doesn't care what Russians
He's
think.
A dictator.
It doesn't matter. He's a dictator.
Exactly. They're like, oh, he really miscalculated here. A lot of the Russian soldiers are dying.
What are you talking about? He likes death. There's people, there's psychopaths that are in power that don't just like to torture enemies. They consider their own people enemies. They like to kill, like Mao Zedong. Read everything he wrote and said. It was very important for him to kill as millions and millions, as many Chinese people as possible. We're just dealing with so much evil here that it's very hard sometimes. A lot of Westerners think like Westerners. Oh, he miscalculated. A lot of his own people are dying. Okay, yeah, like maybe he likes that, right? So, but of course, obviously, he would like to achieve certain strategic objectives. And what you were saying is true. It appears it's not going as well as he thought it would. But James, it all just gets so complicated because the West, I don't even know if I want to call it the West anymore. I'm so uncomfortable with this because before, when we used to say the West, it was kind of Ronald Reagan and Clint Eastwood and John Wayne and Alexander Haig and Chuck Norris, Sylvester Stallone, you know, and now the West is Biden, Kamala Harris, AOC, Klaus Schwab and George Soros and Hillary Clinton, like, the West has been taken over by these evil entities. So there's something very complicated going on in the sense that they're like, we're for you, Ukraine. We're for you, Ukraine. But guess what? We're not really going to help you too much. There's certain force. And by the way, I'm not implying at the same time that the U.S. is supposed to start go to World War III over Ukraine. I'm not saying that either. It's a very complicated situation. But there is something to say that globalists are wanting this thing to bleed, to bleed, to bleed. They want this thing to bleed. And so I recommend very much an individual named Leo Homan, H-O-H-M-A-N-N, leohoman.com. And he's fascinating, very smart man. And, you know, he's always explaining a lot of things that are happening. And he just recently, some of his writings, he's talking about this. He was just on my show recently, the episode's coming out on the Glazov Gang. He is analyzing, what is this thing going on? This is very interesting. Biden's talking about there's going to be a Russian cyber attack. There's going to be a Russian cyber attack. It's like, it's very interesting. What are they talking about all the time? Like, you know, even when they, you know, even when Bill Gates is talking about the next pandemic's going to really get people's attention and he starts smiling, like, what do these people know? And so Biden is warning about the Russian cyber attack. Okay, why is he talking about this so much? So Leo Homan has explained or analyzed, anyway, we don't have all the answers, but just let's keep an eye on this. There's okay. going to be some kind of cyber attack. Okay. And Biden is saying, you know, you banks better handle this properly. So when there's a cyber attack by the evil Russians, because if you keep an eye on this very carefully, there's this hate Russia thing. It's very complicated, and I'm the last one to try to defend Putin. There's a difference between Putin and Russia. So sure. it's in the even though Putin is a monster, it's in the globalists' interest to have the hate Russia thing happening now. Because guess what? When gas prices are high, guess whose fault it is? The bad
the Putin
Russians.
Price hikes.
Yeah. And now that's exactly. And now there's going to be this cyber attack, and the banks aren't going to be able to handle it because of the evil Russians. And then when the banks won't be able to handle it, the globalist savior comes in and says, don't worry. Oh, you couldn't access your money? There's food shortages? Oh, because of the evil Russians. Don't you worry. Here's the digital dollar. Now just put this under your skin here. It's really, really cool. Don't worry. We'll turn it on. Just be good. Be good. Be good for daddy. Don't say anything in favor of Trump. And don't say anything against this. But you're allowed to talk like this. And then guess where we are? Guess where we are? So there's something going on in the background, James. Something going on in the background.
It's well, yeah, and it's maneuvers. They're staging, they're jockeying for their positions because and this has been my theory. The only saving grace, should we have one, is that the fact, based on my experience with at least American politics and the left, they have continuously had a tendency to overreach. Their vision, their reach extends beyond their ability to grasp. And I think if we have a saving grace, that's what it is. I agree with you completely. The Biden administration is not solely rooted in incompetency and fecklessness. There is an intent there with the people behind this this tired, mentally foggy old man.
Yeah, but well, bingo, James. And this is the key. You see that just the themes I've hit on during our discussion and what bothers me about a lot of conservatives and their emotional incapacity. Bill O'Reilly is just awful in terms of this. All those years, oh, he would always be on, why is Obama doing this? You know, I believe that Obama really cares about this country, but why is he doing this? He was saying that almost every night. Okay, just invite David Horowitz on the program and he'll explain it to you. It's that simple. Stop asking why Obama is doing this. Just stop saying that every night for 8 years or however long he was doing it and keeping it all fair and balanced. Just invite David Horowitz on the show, and he'll explain to you why Obama is doing this. But he doesn't want to invite David Horowitz, and he doesn't really want to know why Obama is doing this, because most people, and a very, you know, sometimes I'm careful about saying most or a very large number, most people don't want to accept what the left is, and you hit on it. They, and till this day, oh, Biden is such a failure. Oh, the debt is this, and Biden's really failing. What are you talking about? The main impulse behind the left is malice. It's not naivete. Go learn about what they're up to. Go read about Alinsky. Go read about Gramsci. Go study what
exactly.
The left really wants. They are going to create their paradise. They need to do it on ground zero. That's why I explained and documented the glee and ecstasy that leftists were engaged in after 9/11, because the picture of ground zero are the ashes of the earth that they need to destroy. They need to destroy the earth and then build their paradise on top of the ashes. That, like a five-year-old knows that before you exit a war, you get the ammunition out. Okay, maybe a six-year-old. It doesn't take a genius to figure out that you evacuate certain, like, this is all calculated. It's all malice. They're doing a great job. It's Obama's third term. Biden and all of them, they've got an axe. America's the tree, and they're chopping away at it, and they're doing it very successfully. Now, just to touch on something very quickly here, James, when I was saying that, you know, when I was saying we need to be realistic and be ready for the storm, in a religious sense, be ready for the Antichrist, and know that, you know, the devil is Satan and Gates, you know, succeeds in this, is this. Okay. On the other hand, let's just keep some things in mind. When we read about and when we study how important it is for Klaus Schwab and these globalists to destroy the United States, right? So let's study about how important it is for the left and for the globalists to destroy the United States, because I study this for years. But at the same time, I always think about, so they need to destroy the United States. But guess what? The United States exists. And they didn't succeed in not having a United States. They have to destroy something, right? So that means that good also prevails, because the United States was created and existed and exists. They need to get Trump out of the way, right? They had to get Trump out of the way. They had to get Trump out of the way. But guess what? Trump was in their way, right? So something good happened, right? So we always have to keep that in mind too, that even though the fix is in, even though they have tremendous power, good can always prevail as well. And there's still human agency, and there's still heroes, and there's good people like Rand Paul and Jordan and people like Tucker Carlson. And there's a guy named James that's interviewing me right now. You know, there's a lot of good people, and good people can achieve miracles, just like the U.S. team beat Russia in 1980 for the Olympics. We all remember that moment, even though I was a kid. But so I'm not the guy that's just, oh, yeah, the Antichrist is taking over and everybody's going to jail. I'm not saying that. I'm saying we prepare for stuff like that. Don't be incredulous about it. Be realistic. But at the same time,
absolutely,
we have hope. We have hope. Because if somebody like Trump took that in 2016, they were furious. And can it happen again? Absolutely. Lots of things are possible. Now, just to go somewhere else for a minute, though, at the same time, how possible can it be? And this is a whole other issue, James, but when we have Disney, which is supposed to be a family entertainment channel for children, and now they're boasting that 50% of the content is going to be about trans and the LGBT agenda, or sorry, I guess I need to add Q or some other letters now. My question is, every time I turn on the TV, everything is trans, gay, lesbian, family's bad, et cetera, promiscuity. When I just don't know how much God can bless. I know this is another issue, but how much can God bless this nation when everybody is forced to stand up and give a standing ovation to a little boy being forced to turn into a little girl? I don't know.
It is criminal. And
to me, the left has always viewed children so hypocritically. They will hold them up. I can't remember who it was. Perhaps it was Hillary Clinton. The motivation was we're doing this for the children, as though that was the priority. And children to them are nothing more than a photo opportunity. Look at their positions on abortion. Look at what they're doing look at what DeSantis is working so heroically to try and prevent in Florida. These people don't care about children any more than they care about the pigeonhole identity complex that they have before them. And these people, they tell them all the same thing. They tell the gay people that they're the priority. They tell the Black Lives Matter people that they're the priority. All you got to do is just vote for us. And then at some point, all these people are going to come together and look for their payoff. And there isn't any. And I'm trying to think the percentage of the population in the United States that these folks represent is maybe 2%. And I can't remember who said this as well, but as they cannot reproduce, therefore they must recruit.
Absolutely.
And that's what we see here with Disney. Yeah. That's what we see everywhere.
Absolutely. And it's just, it's escalating so much, James, just right now when we look around, just to keep our faith and keep our sanity, because everywhere we look, there's something very morbid and surreal going on. Just, you turn on the Oscars and the hosts are screaming, this is going to be a gay night, gay. And it's just, what's happening here? Because also, there's nothing about homosexuality and what DeSantis said. Like, it's not, that's not even what's going on. So they're twisting everything, too. DeSantis is not leading some anti-gay campaign against gay people. All that's going on there is trying to make a law that you can't come up to my six-year-old child and start talking to him about sex. The parent is going to take responsibility for that. Stay away from my children. That's all that that's about. So they're twisting all of that. And everything is just so, so surreal. But they're doing all this on purpose. Fyodor Dostoevsky, he was quite a prophet, and in The Devils and Brothers Karamazov, he writes about how these demons, how they work, and they just create this just vast promiscuity and chaos and just all of this mad unreality, and then they form a certain totalitarianism within it. You hit on something again. I'm always feeling a little bit guilty and want to apologize because I go on these tirades and I want to just keep it short, but it just really, really something in my heart when you said they don't care about children. And it hits so close to home, James, because when we even go back to the beginning of this show and talk about my background, and I grew up, I had a certain relative, I had a certain uncle who wrote letters to my great-grandmom from the camps, and you couldn't even read his letter because the tears had smudged the ink. And in my life, I think about him, and I think about the people who suffered. I think about my family. I think about people that I'm not related to, just the people who suffered in the camps, the people who really are victimized by totalitarian regimes. And they're always in my heart. And I dedicated my life to try to protect people from these systems.
Wow. Terrific stuff. Jamie Glazov there. As I've told you before, the editor-in-chief of the Front Page Mag, David Horowitz's aggregate news site with outstanding contributors like our friend Michael Cutler, Jamie Glazov, of course, Robert Spencer, Robert Ibram, Matthew Vadim. I mean, there's just so many talented and really, really intelligent guys there. Let's go ahead and take a quick break, musically that is, and we will be back with more of Conservative Perspective, closing things up here right after this. Maybe.
the west. The third world wonders which way's the best. We got freedom. We got soul. To knock the USA. If we're so awful and we're so bad, you ought to check the nightlife and live.
James Bostic, conservative perspective. You know, I have been away for a while. I've had a lot of things going on. I entered into this thing, man. It was called a Teaching Pathways cohort there with the local school board that I'm employed by. You know, I work during the day in the school system. That's my daytime gig, man. And I've been doing it for a few years now, and they have this opportunity. And there is a test that you can take called the Praxis Examination. And what the Praxis Examination is about has to do with curriculum. Okay? There are three components to the one I'm teaching. The three R's, basically, reading, writing, arithmetic. Took the reading, did okay. Took the writing, haven't found out, should have done okay. Leaving arithmetic next. Now, what's going to happen after I get all these tests taken? I'll be teaching in the county I'm at right now. I'm what they call a multi-categorical male aide. That's kind of like a utility infielder. You know, they just put you wherever they need you because, you know, you can pretty much handle it. And I'm kind of proud of that. But anyway, that's what's been going on. So Tuesdays and Thursdays, you know, there's been a lot of studying, a lot of practice tests taken. They kind of the Khan Academy. Khan! Okay, sorry, that was a little Star Trek thing. they have a series of tests, you know, and they're harder than the actual test, I think, and they kind of program you that way. It seems to be working. I did all right so far. Math test is going to be very, very difficult. We'll just see what we can do, man. So anyway, that's where I've been. That's why the shows have been so sporadic over the last, over the last 3 months or so. And, we're closing in on it. And we're almost done. I've just got one more test to take, and to get that out of the way, we're going to be all right. On Thursday, it is my hope to have fellow radio host Gary Benford, superstar, come join us. Gary and I were together this weekend with friends Don Newen,
Donna Fiducia, Claire Lopez, Trevor Howard. Trevor Howard. Trevor Loudon. Sorry, Trevor. Trevor Loudon, or Trevor Howard was a great British actor. Anyway, Trevor Loudon and John Guandolo, a lot of terrific people there. Jeff Preston, Mike Lindell, the Mr. My Pillow Man himself, was our keynote speaker, and I got to be part of the VIP dinner that they had for him. Hold on a minute, man. Oh, my God. I don't understand why that's happening. Well, yeah, I do. I'm almost 60 years old. That's what I was having. And it was a terrific time. Absolutely terrific time. And I want to encourage you guys. There are a lot of events like this that are going on out there, Freedom Rallies and Rock the Reds and We the People type events. And if you get the opportunity, if you do get that opportunity to go to one of these things, heaven's sakes, man, yeah, go. Check it out if you get the opportunity. You're going to meet some terrific people amongst the folks who go. And, you're going to get a chance to talk. You're going to – been a long day. Been a long couple of weeks. And you get a chance to talk to some of these speakers and authors and political thinkers. And it's a terrific opportunity if, you're geared for that sort of thing. I think that these kind of things, these rallies, the Freedom Rallies, the overpasses of America, they're very important venues for those of us who love the country and want to keep what's happening from continuing to happen. And they're excellent places to network and to find like-minded people that you're going to strike up friendships with that are going to be forever. I mean, I might see them once or twice, physically see them once or twice a year. I may talk to them on the telephone or in interviews maybe three or four times a year. But we know exactly who one another is, and we are always happy to see one another when we get to these events like that. So you ever get a chance, you ought to go. Man, we got a few minutes. I'll just bullshit here. Putin. Putin's having trouble. Putin has some health issues. There's been some speculation that he is ailing. Some people say cancer. He recently last week. God. Let's keep going. He recently, I think it was last week, turned over power temporarily to the man who is the head of his KGB right now, Federal Security Bureau. It's not the KGB anymore, it's the FSB. But turned it over to this guy. He's a hardline Stalinist communist because Vladimir had to have some surgery done. There's been speculation as to Parkinson's. There's been speculation as to cancer. He seems to be a lot more bloated these days. When you look at his face and they're thinking the steroid use may have to do with these ailments. And we look at what's going on. He's still mired in Ukraine. Can't really go anywhere. He's not really advancing. Indiscriminate shelling on civilian targets. That's about it. He's lost. He has lost a great deal of armor. He's lost a great deal of tanks in this thing. He's lost aircraft. He's lost trucks. He's lost armored personnel carrier. He's lost a lot of guys. And we always think, when countries go to war, we look at all the different, intricacies and nuances of foreign policy. And, we have to be careful about doing this for risking, offending these people, or we're going to have to do that to make sure that these guys don't get upset when we do this to these other folks. And it always seems so complicated. But 9 times out of 10, I think war's just, in this case, maybe Putin knew he had something seriously wrong with him and he wanted to attend to business before he wanted to try and solidify Russian territorial holdings before he became too far gone to do anything about it. Maybe it's nothing more sophisticated or more intricate than that. And he bit off more than he could chew. Maybe he vastly overestimated his military preparedness and vastly underestimated the resolve and the resistance capabilities of the Ukrainian people. Sound like it hadn't happened before. It is not like it hasn't happened before. Who's going to argue with the guy? Well, apparently no one, because this is, you know, and it's always this way with the tyrants. You know, Hitler's generals couldn't convince him otherwise about the things that he wanted to do, the military disasters that his leadership led them into. And it may not be any different here. All these years we've spent thinking about how horrible and how intimidating and how awe-inspiring and shocking and powerful and merciless we considered the Russian army to be, and probably for many, many years it was just exactly that. But again, I just want to point out, those cats haven't been in combat in almost 40 years. The last time they had any military dealings was with the Afghans in Afghanistan, and they got their asses handed to them. It was their Vietnam. Not dead, you know, not relax, I'm still here. Inflation and gas prices fundamentally at an all-time high, and Biden wants Congress to go ahead and approve another $70 billion total taxpayer money to fund Ukrainian pensions and to buy, and so they can buy arms. And so they can buy arms. To fund the Ukrainian economy, $70 billion. While most families here in America have to sweat whether or not they can afford a sack of hamburgers for dinner. You hear it all the time. November's coming, and they have these ominous musical tones and drum beats, and it sounds so foreboding and awful of a look, man. Yeah, November's coming, okay? And if we vote out the cats that are in there and we don't do anything more but replace them with the same kind of dude, what have we done? November will come and go, and nothing will change. Nothing will change. So what the hell are you going to do about it? You guys were privileged tonight to hear a remarkably intelligent man speak on his views of the world. And I'm looking forward to having him come back so that we can speak on these things further. I think we're going to go ahead and just close up shop tonight. I'm yawned already about a half a dozen times. And I haven't been, that was recorded. Like I said, all that was recorded. And I haven't been on the air more than 15 minutes, and I'm exhausted. Anyway, that's about all the time we got. Hopefully on Thursday, I'm going to get in touch with my good friend Gary Benford. We're going to have him come. We're going to relive some memories about Rock of the Red. What a great time we had here. We'll be doing that on Thursday. Tuesdays and Thursdays live, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, is what we're going to try to get back to now that I'm almost through with this teacher's examination program that I'm in. So we'll be going back soon, right where we were. We also have the recorded version of the program that's at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Mojo 50 radio network, mojo50.com. If you aren't listening, well, you ought to be, because it's the very best thing, libertarian and conservative talk radio. We're done. Thanks so much for listening. It was great to be back here with you, and we will be back here on Thursday without fail, taking a look at things as we do through a conservative perspective. In the meantime, God bless you. God bless America. Take good care of yourselves, and we'll see you then.